everyone. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. It's really, this year is just whipping by. It's already the end of July, and we're so happy that you're here to join us for our motivation article this month on slowing down to be more productive. And to help me discuss this article, I have two fine people in the studio with me today. My name is Linda, and...
My name is Amanda. It's good to be here with you, Linda.
And my name is Brandon, and it's summertime. I think it's a good time to slow down.
You sound like you slowed down when you said that word. So, do you guys feel like you lead a pretty fast-paced life, or do you feel like you have to force yourselves to slow down?
Yes, I would say yes to both those things. Yes, I live a pretty fast-paced life, and yes, I have to force myself to slow down.
I do live a fast-paced life here in Taipei. Although when I was in America for over a year, it was much different. It was a much slower pace. I was in the countryside. It's very peaceful. So it just depends on where you are and what you're doing in life.
Well, I think this title of this article is quite surprising because usually when we think of being productive, what do you think of?
Well, I think of working harder and working more efficiently and getting things done.
And faster.
Yeah.
What about
right.
you?
I think of producing something. So that means you have to do as much as you can in a certain amount of time and to be productive.
But our article is going to talk about slowing down, and by slowing down, we'll be more productive. It's kind of an interesting article, and we want you to join us as we read it. So if you have your advanced magazine with you, why don't you open it to page 38? Or if you can find it on your digital device, you could read along with us. And we're going to read this whole page before we continue on with the rest of today's article.
Slowing down to be more productive. 7 surprising ways to help you get more done. It wasn't until I bet on myself and became my own boss 2 years ago that the pressure of constant hustling led me to a breaking point. When I ditched the paycheck safety net, I felt that I had to be constantly producing. With my solid work ethic, I thought this would be a liberating breeze. Turns out, it wasn't. Any moment I wasn't at my laptop or on the move, I felt guilty. So I filled up my calendar with meetings and said yes to undesirable projects. But instead of feeling in control, excited and free, I felt stressed out, resentful, and alone. This taught me the importance of slowing down in order to speed up. Here's what I've learned. 1. Always ask yourself why. It took time to truly implement this. Before you take on a new project, task, or responsibility, ask yourself, why am I doing this? Keep asking that question until you reach an answer that feels satisfactory. Your why should feel certain and comforting. If your answer is, I'm doing this to please someone, or because I'll feel guilty if I don't, is that good enough?
So, first of all, would you like to be your own boss?
I must say that I have thought about it at times. So I'm still not sure. I think I'm in the in-between phase of, should I or shouldn't I? Yeah.
Do you have thoughts of liberation when you think of it?
Yes, I think that is one of the main reasons is, to be able to control what you're wanting to do.
How about you, Brandon?
Not so much, but I think at a later stage in life, if I have a lot of experience in something and I feel prepared, then yes. But I'm the type of person, I like a lot of structure. And so if I'm my own boss, I might get up at 10 in the morning and, you know, or whatever. So I like to be at a certain place at a certain time. So I think it's good for me right now not to be my own boss.
I kind of like to go to work with other people. Mm-hmm. And I think if I work alone, probably I would be like baking cookies all day long.
Well, we don't mind that.
Well, the other question I think that would be good to discuss is, why do we feel the need to be productive? I mean, what does that mean to us?
I think we we feel the need to be productive because that means that we're succeeding or we're doing well. I mean, we already do that at school, right? You know, when you're already doing your schoolwork and then your homework, that leads to you passing your test, which equals success.
Right.
And I think it gives us a sense of purpose that we're doing something that's good and we can look at it, something tangible, something we can see.
Okay. Well, we see here that actually the author, Susie Moore, ended up being quite surprised. She thought that it was going to be extremely liberating, and she found it sounds like the exact opposite of what her expectations were. So it said at the beginning, it says that she became her own boss about 2 years ago, and then the pressure of constant hustling led her to a breaking point. So if you are constantly hustling, it means you're constantly, well, it has a lot of different meanings. It means to move quickly but and to get things done and maybe to try to sell things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, making money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then because of that, there's a pressure of that because it's her own business. I think this is a thing that's scary for a lot of people. It's all of that's on you.
Mm-hmm.
It led her to a breaking point.
Basically, she lost control because she was moving around so much, doing so many different things. She could not take it anymore. So that is the breaking point. You can actually think of yourself just breaking in a sense because you lose control.
Okay. And then she ditched the paycheck safety net. This is a great sentence.
Hmm.
When you ditch something, you get rid of something. And we do think of paychecks as a safety net, don't we?
Yeah, it brings a lot of security. You know, if you've got bills that you need to pay, you're thinking, when is my next payday? So that I can organize my bills to come out around that time, get them sorted out. You know, how much am I putting into my savings? How much have I got to spend this month? So there's a lot of security placed on our paycheck.
Right. So the safety net is the safeguard that we look at that's going to, like, save us from hardship or being able to pay our bills, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you think about the money that you make, and that provides some sense of security for you.
Okay. But because she ditched it or got rid of that, then she had a lot of pressure.
Right. You start to worry, well, where is the money going to come from so that I can deal with my living expenses? And so she said, I felt that I had to be constantly producing because, again, if she's producing, then she's making money.
Right. And she goes on to say that she has a solid work ethic. She thought that this would be a liberating breeze, but it turns out it wasn't. And this is a term that's kind of interesting, a work ethic. And it's a principle that places a lot of value on hard work and diligence. And I think a lot of us were raised that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes, my dad has a very strong work ethic, meaning that he gets up every day, he goes to work, and, you know, even on the weekends, he's working on a project. So it's just instilled in him.
And, you know, we use this, you know, that person doesn't have a very good work ethic, which means we feel like they're kind of lazy or mm-hmm. don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
And with her, she felt that, because she had this solid work ethic, which means that she felt she put a lot of value on hard work, that she thought that being her own boss would be a liberating breeze, would be easy.
Mm-hmm.
If something is a breeze, it's easy.
And liberating just means freeing, or there's a lot of freedom in something.
But she was quite surprised, wasn't she?
Yeah, she said, it turns out it wasn't. So it wasn't at all what she expected it to be.
Right, and why not?
Well, anytime she wasn't at her laptop or on the move, she felt guilty about it. So it wasn't as liberating or that breeze that she felt. It was actually more stressful than she thought.
Right. It doesn't say here whether she was just herself, she was just working for herself,
right,
or had people working for her. I have a friend that owns his own company, and he also feels a lot of pressure because he has people working for him, and he's constantly having to, you know, drum up business because they're responsible for producing, but he's responsible for their safety net.
Right.
Mm. Kind of a scary thought, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
And so because she needed to, you know, feel needed or feel like she was being productive, she filled up her calendar with meetings and said yes to undesirable projects. And I know we're probably all thinking, well, why would you ever do that? But
well, she just, you know, she said instead of feeling in control, excited and free, she felt stressed out. Of course she did, because maybe, you know, she felt she needed to be productive and she needed to make money, and so she had to put all of these things on her calendar. So she was, I guess, looking at things from the wrong perspective. You know, if we do that, then we'll say yes to things we shouldn't, because we feel this need to fulfill something and so forth.
Right. And here, for an undesirable project, you know, we really don't know what her line of business was that she was in, but it's just something that she really didn't want to be involved in. It doesn't mean that it was bad. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, maybe it wasn't bad for somebody else, but for her, it was something she probably wasn't really interested in, so she didn't really feel like she could put her heart into it. So she not only was stressed out, she also felt resentful because she didn't want to be doing it, and she felt alone because probably she got herself into this position.
And the interesting thing is, Linda, she is the boss, and
right.
she feels out of control, so right. that's kind of strange.
And that's why she left her job in the first place.
Right, exactly. The one thing she was trying to get away from, she's actually starting to do again.
I think even if we're not our own bosses, if we're working for an organization, sometimes we just have to sit back and take stock or look at what we're doing and why we're doing it a certain way or why we're involved in certain projects. And it might give us a better perspective on why we're doing what we're doing or the way that we're working at something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We need to find purpose in what we're doing. And if we don't stop and reflect, then what... we won't know the needed changes.
Right. And sometimes by thinking about it, you look at it maybe a more efficient way of accomplishing something.
Right. Also, does it have to do with the goals that you're trying to achieve, you know, or the values like Brandon mentioned? Or the values that you're trying to achieve as well. They need to come in line together. And if they're not, then they become, like she had, these undesirable projects.
Right. And so all of this together, it sounds like she started thinking about it and realized that this was not really why she had done what she did. And it taught her the importance of slowing down in order to speed up. Does that sentence make sense to any, either one of you?
Not yet, but I'm hoping we'll learn more soon.
Well, I think she's just trying to say that by stopping and reflecting. You just said, Linda, that you can stop and think about something and find a more efficient way to do it. So if you stop, you slow down, you might think of something that will help you in the long run to speed up.
Right. Or to be maybe be more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we just do things because they've always been done that way, or
right.
we've always done them that
right.
way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a revelation when we think, oh, there is another way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for her, probably it was that light bulb moment, you know,
yeah.
when the light bulb goes on and she's like, oh, this is what I've learned. So she's going to share with us 7 ways to help us get more done. And the first one, I heard Brandon say he really liked this one.
Yes, I did. When we were off air, it talks about asking yourself why. That's always a good question. Whatever you're working on, why am I doing this? What's the purpose of it?
And the first sentence is, it took time to truly implement this. I don't think we want to ask why. We just sometimes want to do.
Right. I mean, asking why can also mean we have to really search deep, you know, what is this really achieving? And is this in line with my goals or my values? I like that word implement, you know, because it means that you're actually putting it into action. So you're not only asking the question why, but you actually have to action it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think for some of us, you know, if we owned our own company and we were responsible for it, we might feel the pressure of having to take everything because we have to make money.
Right.
You know, so we don't feel like we have the time to ask why or the right to ask why because we have the responsibility to produce.
Especially like in your friend's case, if you have employees that are relying on you for their salary.
Mm-hmm. So before you take on a new project or something, you need to ask yourself, why am I doing this? I think this is not just for if we own our own company or in our job. It's for every part of our lives.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. If someone asks you to do something, should you do that? You know, you can fill your calendar up very quickly, and then you get to that meeting and you think, why am I doing this?
Right.
So always ask yourself that question.
And I like the answer should always feel certain and comforting. Okay? Are you doing it to please somebody else? Mm-hmm. Are you doing what somebody else wants? Are you doing it because you'll feel guilty if you don't do it?
Mm-hmm.
And the question, is that good enough? And I think that she came to the answer, no, it's not. It has to be good for her.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's continue our reading. We're on page 39, and we're at the top of the left-hand column, and we're going to read these two short paragraphs.
Two, say no twice as often as you normally do. Warren Buffett once said, "The difference between successful people and very successful people is that very successful people say no to almost everything. Saying no is the one saving grace that successful people share. They openly admit they don't do it all. They just do what matters most to them. This applies to social invitations, additional office duties, and even business opportunities. What can you say no to? 3. Stop thinking it must be a struggle. Look at people like Richard Branson, Tony Robbins, and Sheryl Sandberg. They work hard, but they have a lot of fun doing it too. Their work energizes them. This mentality can't help but breed continued creativity and success."
So our second point that she brings up is that say no twice as often as you normally do.
Well, I think this is really great, Linda, because, you know, I think I don't say no enough. I'm a bit of a yes person, so it's a good reminder to have this. But I think it's really interesting that it's we go on to see that Warren Buffett actually said something once. Warren Buffett is a man well known because he's made a lot of money through business and investments. So many people admire his strategies. He once said the difference between successful people and very successful people is that very successful people say no to almost everything.
I find that so hard to believe. But he is extremely successful, and in the States, a lot of people listen to him. They invest where he invests or the kind of investments he makes because he usually has very good strategies and has made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But not only that, his values and principles are quite good. He still lives modestly and doesn't use his money to live a very lavish lifestyle and doesn't provide a lavish lifestyle for his kids because he wants them to learn good values and have a good work ethic as well. So when he speaks, a lot of people listen.
Yes.
I think to me this is saying you need to be very focused. If you're saying yes to too many things and you're spreading yourself too thin and you do not get much accomplished, you're not very productive.
Mm. Very well said. And she says that saying no is the one saving grace that successful people share. And this is kind of an interesting phrase, saving grace. And what does it mean, Brandon?
Well, here it means one positive quality that they all have and that the successful people have here.
Right. Sometimes we use saving grace if somebody is very annoying, but they have one really positive quality. You can say that is their saving grace.
Right.
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 And here we're saying that saying no is one of the things that successful people share, and they say they don't do it all.
Well, just think about how busy someone like Warren Buffett is. Mm-hmm. If they don't say no, then, you know, they're just going to have a full schedule all the time. And he probably still has a full schedule, but it's with the things that fall in line with his purpose and his goals.
Right, and that's what the next second half of the sentence is. They just do what matters most to them. Mm-hmm. They don't care really about pleasing everybody that they meet.
Right, and I think that, you know, when you first start out, you may not be well known, you may not be famous, but you might have a lot of opportunities. Mm-hmm. So there you have to choose, which ones do I take, which ones do I say no to? But then obviously for somebody like Warren Buffett, the more successful you become, the more invitations you acquire, and the more you might have to say no.
So why are we so afraid to say no?
Letting people down, disappointing them.
Yes, I think we want to please people.
I agree.
Or we think it's our responsibility. If we don't do something, what are they going to think about us? If we're in the workplace, we think, oh, maybe we won't be seen in a positive light if we say no. There's all sorts of reasons, but it usually has something with pleasing people, I think.
Yeah. And I also think maybe missed opportunities. I mean, if we're looking at somebody as, you know, that's my opportunity to do something or to get to know, you know, even though I'm not that interested, mm-hmm. I still will say yes.
Well, sometimes we do need to say yes because the job needs to be done and someone has to do it and we want to help out and be a team player. So we just have to know the line.
Mm. Could you join my team?
No.
Nope. See how Brandon stepped up and learned to say no. And her third point is, stop thinking it must be a struggle.
Right.
We do think that, don't we?
Yes, because it's like we just mentioned, it's hard to say no for a lot of people. You know, you're inclined more to say yes because then people will like you or there'll be a positive feeling that comes mm-hmm. from saying yes. You know, when we say no, people might feel rejected mm-hmm. or, yeah, just let down.
Right, and I think that's so interesting because when she left her job, the safety net of her paycheck, I wonder if she felt like, I know it's going to be a struggle, you know, for a while. And she struggled with, I always have to be busy. I have to do everything everybody wants from me. And finally she came to realize she does not have to. And she gives three good examples of people, Richard Branson, Tony Robbins, and Sheryl Sandberg. Mm-hmm. And so let's see what they do. I mean, just for our audience, if you don't know who they are.
Well, Richard Branson is an entrepreneur, and also he launched Virgin Records.
Right, and he has started 400 companies belong to that Virgin Group. Mm-hmm. So he's quite well known, actually.
He is well known, and recently he's known because he's been going into space exploration.
Right.
All about commercializing that, so he's quite well known for that. Tony Robbins, he's known because he is a philanthropist, but he started out as a, what would you call that, a positive speaker?
Right. He's also like a life coach, a self-help guru.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's gone on to have a lot of great athletes, people like the Williams sisters in tennis, Tiger Woods, these kinds of people to help them overcome the barriers that stop them when they're playing sports and be successful. So he's well known for that. And Sheryl Sandberg.
Well, she's the chief operating officer of Facebook. And she's an author and an activist in several different areas. So, you know, it says that they all work hard, but they have fun doing it.
And that's important. That means they like what they're doing, I think, if they're having fun.
I got to see Tony Robbins has a documentary about what he does. And he works very, very hard from morning till night, but he gets a lot of energy from what he's doing, helping people. Just like it says here, the work they do energizes them. And I think that's very important because they've known what their values are mm-hmm. and what their goals are.
Right. And I think for one of the reasons that we want to introduce this article, notice that it's under our heading of motivation, is that, you know, for all of us, we want to take a look at what we're doing. Does it energize us or does it drain us? Mm-hmm. Do you leave every day going, I'm so glad to be out of here. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that's over. I just can't stand to do this another minute. Or are we learning something from it? And do we feel like, oh, I want to continue with this project. I want to learn more from it. Is it energizing to us? And I think for all of us, you know, we need to sometimes sit back and take stock of our lives and see why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah, and even maybe you're in a job right now, you feel that you have to continue in that job, but you don't feel energized. What can you do outside of that job that will mm-hmm. add purpose to your life and energize you? That's another way to look at it as well.
Right.
Right. And I think that when we feel energized in what we're doing, it can make even the difficult circumstances that we're facing, because, you know, we might be working on a difficult project or a difficult challenge that comes our way, then we're able to get through it and overcome it.
I think it also helps us to view failure in a different way, what we think of as failure, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know we've used Thomas Edison as an example like umpteen times, but, you know, the light bulb did not work for him until after over the 100th time they had done various experiments. And if he hadn't continued, we would be reading this by candlelight.
Yeah, that's right.
So
I think an important word here is the word mentality. What's your mentality? What is your way of thinking? And mm-hmm. if we change our way of thinking, that will do, will make a world of difference in our life and our job. So that's something to consider. What's your perspective? How can that be changed? What can you do?
And, you know, this doesn't go with age, because I think all of us work with Peng Menghui, and, you know, she is extremely creative.
Mm.
And still, you know, sometimes she's the most forward-thinking one. She never says, we've always done it this way.
Mm-hmm. She does.
To me, you know, when you look at her, you can see her mind turning and how we can do something differently or how we can think differently.
Mm.
And she's going to love that I say that she's 90. So have heart. Well, that's all of our time for today. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow as we continue in Advanced Studio Classroom. Bye for now.
Goodbye.